Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Swing and a line drive. Base hit right field.
Do you believe it? Howie Kendrick, part two.
The celebration is on. The Washington Nationals are the world champions.
It's great for me to say that, you know, I'm going to be a national for life, but to have my kids be here too and experience being nationals for life as well, that's something that's I'm really fortunate with.
Hello and welcome into another off-season edition of the Nationals Talk podcast. And today's edition is a year in review for Steven Strasburg. We did one earlier this off-season for Anthony Rendon, who is now with the Angels. Strasburg, of course, back with the Nats, 7-year, $245 million deal. There was a hastily put together press conference in San Diego when it happened in the winter meetings, but now Steven Strasburg has said here in D.C. he is a national for life. Todd, you were at the press conference. Give us any of the lowdown from the presser which Strasburg had, and also tell us about the new World Series championship logos that were on display at the presser.
Well, we can start with the logos. When you walk by the entrance to the Nationals clubhouse down there underneath the stadium, there are a bunch of plaques that say, you know, NL division champion and have the year and everything. And since they had never won a playoff game, those are the only plaques they won. It says division title, division title, division title, division title. Then there was the World Series champion logo on the podium yesterday, or Tuesday, I should say. And, That was interesting. I'm expecting to see the park well-populated with those logos going forward. The thing that jumped out to me about the press conference itself was this was by far the most insightful, kind of relaxed and open Steven Strasburg we've seen. His two little girls were in the front row with his wife the entire time. The older one slid off a chair and hit the floor at one point, which made him laugh. And they were fidgeting around, and he kept glancing over there and smiling, and definitely saw a very mature Steven Strasburg, someone who has gone from being underage when it comes to buying alcohol to now a two-time dad who's married, World Series MVP, will be with the organization for 17 years when this final contract expires.
You talk about not being old enough to buy beer. Chase, like me, you've been here every step of the way in D.C. for Strasburg's career ever since June of 2010, and you covered the team intimately many of the seasons. Do you think 2019, and we're not talking about October for this particular question, did you think this was his best season yet?
Well, I think statistically it wasn't. He had 1 year where he had a 2.5 ERA. This year it was up around 3.3 because he was a little bit inconsistent starting out his season. So I think if you account for the playoffs, then yes, of course it was his best year. But technically he's put up some better numbers in the past. But first, on the World Series logos, I don't know how late into the next season teams usually display those, but it does remind me of the Nationals with once their All-Star bid was announced. They put those logos up and displayed them prominently for years and years. So I would imagine they're going to do the same thing with the World Series logos, and I don't think you can blame them. It was kind of funny at times with just how much they showed off the World Series logos. It had in left field, it was on the wall for I think like 3 full seasons. But when you win a World Series, I think you can basically display that any way you want. As far as this press conference goes, there was a quote that stood out to me that Todd tweeted, and it was, "I've been around here long enough that a lot of the young kids don't even know who I am. They know who Trey Turner is, and they know who Juan Soto is." And I found that really interesting because I'm sure there is some truth to that. Now Steven Strasburg's 31. He's not the biggest personality. He's obviously a great player, but he's overshadowed in his own position group with Max Scherzer being the legend, the guy who is a sure Hall of Famer. But Steven Strasburg, I think, is the theme kind of played out in his press conference about how he could be a national for life. You know, Todd mentions the 17 years. He's going to turn 38 in the final season of that contract. In all likelihood, he's going to spend the rest of his career with the Nationals. And the more I was thinking about it as I watched it and I heard those quotes, the more I think that he could not too long in the future maybe supplant Ryan Zimmerman as the guy who's considered the most important player in Nationals history. Because keep in mind, he was the first overall pick, the first one before Bryce Harper. He had the debut that we've talked about how kind of legitimized the franchise. And if he is their first homegrown Hall of Famer, and especially as years go on, and Ryan Zimmerman will certainly be remembered by Nats fans, but he's not going to be in the Hall of Fame, I think Steven Strasburg could end up being the guy that people associate with the Nationals maybe more than anyone else.
Aren't we already there?
Oh, I don't think so. I think most people would say Ryan Zimmerman, you know, he was front and center on the Sports Illustrated cover, I think, for a reason. Bryce Harper, I think, over time has been associated with them more than Steven Strasburg. And there might even be some people out there who would say Max Scherzer because he's a better pitcher and pitched game seven and has been their ace. So I would say that there's still some time to go on, but I would say it's Ryan Zimmerman and maybe Steven Strasburg has a chance.
Yeah, I hear you, and there's a lot of sentimentality to the fact that Zimmerman's played at least one game in every single season, which is crazy because the 05 Nats seems like, you know, three decades ago. But, you've heard me say before that I feel that the organization had its second birth on June 8th, 2010, when he took the mound and became an actual major league squad, and now he's the World Series MVP of the year which they won the World Series. But all your points are well taken. So, you know, but in 7 years at the end of this contract, I think Mr. National will be Strasburg because he'll have been a major part of what should be a continued run of success in some capacity.
Sure. I think Juan Soto could have something to say about that, but I would agree.
All right. So now we get to looking back on this season. We're going to do a little Tarantino style. We're going to go out of order continuity wise. And so I want to start with his October run, which of course will be lionized and you know will be remembered forever here in Washington. And it was capped off with him being the World Series MVP. And he was so dominant against Houston that he was World Series MVP without taking the mound in Game 7 of the World Series. He pitched in Game 2. He pitched in Game 6. Almost went the distance in Game 6. Todd, did you think he deserved to be the World Series MVP? Because there were some people who felt maybe that you could have made a case for a Juan Soto or Howie Kendrick, but really I think Soto was the main competitor with him, or even Anthony Rendon.
I think he deserved it on an individual basis. I agree with you. It could have been one of those other guys as well. I do think in part it was somewhat just representative of how they did it in that it went to a pitcher. You know, exemplified that because that's what the whole thing was anchored on. It was anchored on those first three guys, you know, as we've talked about over and over, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin.
Hey, Todd, whatever. Did you know the Nats were 19-31 when they started the season too?
I heard that somewhere before. So I think that often happens with those awards is like what is the unit, the most important unit, and then like who's a representative from that unit. If Max Scherzer pitches, I don't know, 8 innings in Game 7, does he end up getting it? So I think that's part of it. You know, when it was announced, I didn't have any problem with it and still don't. I think those things are a little overrated because it's a small sample size and it's not so opportunity-based and all those sorts of things. So kudos to him. Scott Boras is going to keep saying that forever. It will forever be on his baseball reference page, and, you know, everyone will remember what he did. It almost, to me, overshadows what he did in the wild card game, which that was the basis to unlock everything else afterward. So, you know, you remember Josh Hader blowing it, you remember Grisham overrunning the ball, but Steven Strasburg, you know, rescued that game.
3-2. Swing and a miss. He struck him out on a curveball. So Strasburg retires the side in order, and he has 3 strikeouts over 2 innings of relief.
Chase, would your vote have been for the World Series MVP now that it's been a little over a month since we played that game?
Yeah, I think so. Obviously, there were a lot of candidates, and there were a lot of guys that contributed to the entire postseason run, but I think he was their most valuable player and their best player throughout October. And, you know, he pitched at some opportune times in the World Series, including, of course, Game 6 when they were facing elimination. One of those elimination games, they just kept winning them. And Steven Strasburg helped them get over the hump in that game and force a Game 7. You know, some of the numbers were historic that he put up. He had 47 strikeouts, most ever, for a National League pitcher in the postseason. Only Curt Schilling in 2001 had more. I thought his best start was in against the Cardinals.
Strasburg toes the rubber. He's got the sign from Suzuki, and he deals. Swing and a miss, changeup in the dirt. Down goes Ozuna. Strikeout number 9 for Steven Strasburg.
7 innings pitched without an earned run, struck out 12, 0 walks, but you know, he gave up 2 runs in each of his starts in the World Series, but in that Game 6, you know, they were early and he was able to rally late.
Strasburg sets the pitch. Swing and a miss, struck him out. Waved at a curveball in the dirt. Oh, what a big pitch for Strasburg of the Nationals, striking out Altuve.
Todd mentioned Steven Strasburg is just a different pitcher now, where if he faces adversity, especially early in a game, it's not going to affect him like it used to. And he ended up being the first pitcher ever to go 5-0 in a postseason. So we've discussed on this podcast how, for some reason, you know, pitchers tend to be associated with title-winning teams, I think, more than hitters. We've seen it time and time again throughout history. And I think Strasburg became that guy for the Nationals because he was just so lights out throughout the postseason run. And we've also mentioned this many times on the podcast, but I think it's worth, you know, addressing in this episode that, you know, he changed a pretty steadfast narrative about him. And I don't think he will be associated with the shutdown from 2012 like he used to, because that was, if you ask most people, what is Steven Strasburg and the postseason make you think about? And they would say the shutdown. And he rewrote that narrative in a dramatic way and became legitimately one of the best postseason pitchers we've seen in a long time. I mean, he's up there with Schilling and, you know, Madison Bumgarner, John Lester, Josh Beckett, some of the best playoff pitchers that we've seen in the last few decades. Steven Strasburg's, I think, added his name to that list.
Yeah, I mean, the shutdown narrative, that being now shut down, is so important that we made sure to talk about it in our Game 7 World Series podcast. You know, and again, he didn't throw a pitch that game, but that cloud, that narrative that hung over the 2012 postseason and throughout, it's gone. It's over. And it's so, Nats fans are obviously, were so annoyed with it and so happy that it's no longer there. I think, you know, Chase, I agree with you. I think it's worth pointing out in this episode. You know, Todd, you mentioned it all started with the Milwaukee game and it, you know, Strasburg 5-0 in the postseason. He appeared in 6 games, and that's when all 6 of them, the only one he didn't get a victory in, a no decision in Game 5 in LA when the Nats, of course, rallied late starting in the 8th inning. But that wild card game, you know, so much is talked about, of course, what happened in the 8th inning. But after 5 innings, Scherzer exits. It's Milwaukee 3, Nats 1. The building just completely felt like, here we go again. Nats are going to lose another elimination game at home. And either of you interrupt me if you felt differently that night, if the vibes were different that evening on October 1st in the building. And then Strasburg comes in 3 innings, gives up just 2 hits, strikes out 4 guys, throws up blanks, and now the Nats are down 3-1 entering the bottom of the 8th against Hader. We all know what happened there. Hudson comes in the 9th. And on to Los Angeles we go. But Todd, what are some of the things that stand out to you when you kind of look back on that evening in the wild card game when he sort of came to the rescue to Scherzer?
Yeah, as Chase was talking about and we've talked about prior, to me that's 100% where this narrative about Steven Strasburg began to crank around, right? He came out of the bullpen. He was unaffected by doing that. He was super effective on the mound. It was a desperate situation for the team. So both change in routine and high pressure didn't put him in a place where he ended up failing. Instead, he excelled. We saw that through the rest of October. And he allowed them to kind of take a breath. And I agree with you, Tim. The sentiment at the time was, oh, Nationals can't score. You know, they just barely made it here. They're going to get knocked out again. They're not ever going to advance. And all those kind of feelings that are associated with the team because of what happened in postseasons past. And in that instance, you know, you kind of get a boost from, okay, well, the guy we brought in is not Fernando Rodney. It's
Steven Strasburg, and he's suddenly chopping up the Brewers and giving you an opportunity to climb back into the game, giving you an opportunity to wake up everybody in the stands, and giving you an opportunity to kind of start to define what your postseason run is going to look like. And we ended up knowing that that was going to be defined by late rallies, unlikely rallies, and all this stuff they hadn't done in the past. And the stuff that hadn't been done in the past included Steven Strasburg kind of showing up in a really big moment and taking control of things. We saw that happen in the Cubs series when he made his start when he was sick in Wrigley Field and dominated there. But we hadn't really seen a relief appearance like this. And all at once, like I said, the turning of what people thought about Strasburg started, and a strategy for an entire postseason was born.
One thing is, you know, remember where Davey Martinez was getting very much criticized in the middle of the game. It was through 2.5 innings. Brewers were up 3-0. Remember, they scored 3 runs in the first 3 minutes of the game, basically. Mm-hmm. But we go to the bottom of the third. Robles, Scherzer, Turner due up. And many people thought that this was the time to lift Scherzer, bring in a pinch hitter, and then bring in Strasburg to start the fourth. Robles struck out. Scherzer grounded out. Turner hit a homer.
He's gone! Into the Brewers' bullpen. On the right side corner, the Nationals are on the board. It's Trey Turner's first career postseason homer.
Totally forgot that Trey Turner hit a solo homer in that game. And then Scherzer pitched 2 more scoreless innings. So something interesting to look back on.
So you're saying he was right, Tim, and everybody else was wrong?
Davey Martinez pressed all the right buttons. You could say Chase.
I thought he got away with one there, though.
What would you say, Chase, that he sort of took some dice and rolled it? How would you describe that, Chase?
Yes, dice roll, Davey. That was the beginning of that. First of all, I would say that I personally thought that the Nats were still in the game just because they had mounted so many comebacks throughout the year. But I thought Dave Martinez was making a major mistake by leaving Max Scherzer in there. I thought after the first inning, he should have brought Steven Strasburg in. Obviously, it ended up working out. Strasburg gave them exactly what they needed. He bridged enough of the middle innings to avoid the part of the bullpen that they didn't want to go to. And what struck me about his performance that night was just how casual it was. You know, Todd mentioned how he was coming out of the bullpen for the first time. His routine was thrown off. But it kind of reminded me of, remember Cliff Lee back in his heyday when he would almost like yawn on the mound? He'd be so just relaxed. And there was that one famous play, I think he was pitching for the Phillies, where someone hit a line drive and he caught it like behind his back. Like he just casually caught the ball with his glove behind his back. It kind of reminded me of that. Steven Strasburg, it looked like he was pitching in a spring training game. Like he was just not fazed by any of it. And obviously gave the Nationals exactly what they needed. So, I mean, I said it on the postgame podcast that night. I thought Davey got away with one, but you know, I think over the month of October, he proved that his instincts were very, very correct, and especially with how he was using his pitching staff. And Max Scherzer, as you mentioned, ended up finishing that start, even though it wasn't a long one. He finished it pretty strong.
Any other leftover October thoughts before we transition to the regular season for him?
One last one is that if you look at his game logs, obviously he ended up having a tremendous postseason, but his worst postseason start was technically game 5 against the Dodgers, and he still had a quality start, Strasburg. 6 innings pitched and 3 earned runs, and the Nationals, of course, won that game. So that was his worst start of the postseason, 6 innings and 3 earned runs, which in with the like a different grading scale in October, that's basically like pitching a gem. Like I feel like if your starting pitcher gets you 5 innings and only gives up 3 runs, like doesn't even get to 6, then you consider that a success because you're going up against such good lineups. But that was basically the basement for Strasburg. He was that good.
Yeah, I agree with that one. He didn't have his A stuff by any means, and obviously in the 8th inning, the homers off Kershaw changed the entire future of the franchise. But he did keep him in it. I thought he was going to get chased out of the game early on, but he was able to stay with it. We now get to look at some of the highlights, and there's a low light to it in the regular season. And, you know, looking through his year, his best months, like June, he was completely dominant. He won all 5 of his starts in July. He had a solid September, a good August, a bad first start of the year, which is interesting to look back on. The first game of the year, his first start of the year, March 30th against the Mets. Six innings, gives up seven hits, four runs. No decision there as the Nats fell to 0-2 that day. But I felt my favorite start of the year for Strasburg, and Todd, we've talked about this game a little bit. We talked about it in our Best of April podcast, was in Miami, April 21st. The Nats had lost Friday night and Saturday night to the lowly Marlins, and Strasburg took the mound like a true stopper. Eight innings, completely shut down the Marlins, and I felt it set a tone for the season of Strasburg. That was my favorite Strasburg start of the year.
One ball, two strikes. Strasburg winds, delivers, swing, and a miss. He blows him away with a fastball for his 11th strikeout of the afternoon. A 1-2-3 inning for Strasburg, cruising through eight innings here in Miami.
Yeah, it's weird that is a notable start, right? Though we did talk about before the season began how important it would be to have success against the Marlins if you either wanted to win the division or, you know, at a minimum get into the playoffs. And that was a huge factor for the Nationals to get into the playoffs because they beat the daylights out of the Marlins throughout the season. And it's also strange that Strasburg didn't start great. One really interesting thing to me, as we talk about his start and we talked about his postseason and we're jumping around a bit here, is Max Scherzer, after Strasburg's press conference on Tuesday, said what he thought was most important for Strasburg this year was health. And the immediate reaction to that is, duh, of course, right? Like, he has the talent. It's a matter of staying on the mound for him. But Scherzer's point was more of this, that when you don't have time off of the mound at some point during the season, you're basically building on everything you've done throughout the year. And so when you get to the postseason, you're in this place of such mastery of your pitches because you haven't had any blips during the year that you're able to excel there and really just be in tune with everything that you're doing. Obviously, in Scherzer's case, he had two injuryless stints this year and then had the neck back problems later in the playoffs. So I thought that was really interesting to hear him talk about kind of the cumulative benefit of throwing 200 innings or more when you get to the postseason. It wasn't if you maintain your body, then your freshness is as much as it can be at that point when everyone else is tired too. But from a pitcher standpoint, it was more about being in sync, being in tune, and being able to do what you wanted to do, even though it was the toughest part of the year.
All good points there. With just a quick note on his Miami starts, talk about the start in April against them. He then faced them again in June 27th, seven innings, four runs, got the win, nothing special in that one. Then had a quick turnaround, faced them July 3rd, 14 strikeouts against the Marlins there.
This will be a 1-2 to Anderson. It's on the way. Swing and a miss. Struck him out with a curveball. And that's the first out here in the top of the eighth, and the 14th strikeout of the game for Steven Strasburg.
Faced him again on August 31st, 14 strikeouts yet again, and then he faced him on September 21st in a 10-4 win that he did not get the decision, and he had six strikeouts there. So he twice had 14 strikeouts on Miami this year. Chase, as you go through it, I know you do research better than anyone I know. Give me some of your top thoughts on Strasburg this year, 2019, as you've dove through the numbers.
Well, speaking of the Marlins, I think you guys might be even underselling it, how much he dominated them this year. So Baseball Reference, if you look at game logs, they have Bill James game scores for every game. His best three starts based on that metric were against Miami. You mentioned August 31st, he had 14 strikeouts and zero walks and pitched eight shutout innings. And then you mentioned April 21st and July 3rd. Total versus Miami this year, 4-0, a 0.95 ERA, 49 strikeouts and 37 and a third innings pitched. So Miami, he just absolutely dominated. And I think in total this year for Strasburg was something that we've seen kind of throughout his career where he starts a little slow. He had uneven outings to begin the year. After four starts, his ERA was at about 5.5, but he finished strong. And that's another ironic part of his career if you put it in the context of the September shutdown. September and October in the regular season have been by far his best month or his best time of the year. He's got a 1.95 career ERA in, I think it's 223 innings in September/October. So he finishes really, really strong. And also, if you look at his splits, Baseball Reference will split things into quadrants in terms of pitches. It's like 1 through 25 in a start, 26 through 50 and so on. His best numbers are at pitch 76 through 100. So he finishes strong in starts and throughout the year. And we saw that happen this year. But technically, statistically, his best month was in July. He went 5-0 that month with a 1-1 ERA. And that was important timing because that's when Max Scherzer got injured and started missing time. And Strasburg didn't have the best month of August, but I think that initial jolt that he gave the rotation once Scherzer went out was a big part of why they were able to, you know, achieve stability while Scherzer was out. Obviously, Joe Ross stepped up, Eric Fetty stepped up, Anibal Sanchez did his part, so did Patrick Corbin. But right when Max Scherzer started missing starts, I think he only made two in the month of July, Steven Strasburg really, really stepped up. And, you know, Max Scherzer, as we've mentioned on this podcast, has been arguably the most durable pitcher of his generation. So when he went down, I'm sure there was an element of shock to the team because they're just so used to him pitching. And to have Strasburg step up and develop into an ace, you know, especially at the most important times of the year, I think was really, really good for the team. I think it's important to note that Strasburg, as good as he was this year, you mentioned there might be an argument that it was his best season. He didn't make the All-Star team this year.
Yeah. Yeah, that was I was surprised by that in the moment. I felt, especially considering the amount of pitchers to make it. Now, the only it's hard to remember the exact thing with All-Star games 6 months later, but All-Star games get weird with pitchers just because you have so many bad teams who have to have a representative. That might have been a factor in it. But I'll tell you what, he's going to make the All-Star team next year because his manager's going to be picking. Davey Martinez, we know, is going to be in L.A.
True. One last note on his regular season. It does need to be mentioned. He had 10 RBIs at the plate as a hitter and hit a homer July 18th against Atlanta.
The 1-0 is driven to deep left field. This one's way, way back. It's going, and long gone. Steven Strasburg puts it over the Atlanta bullpen for his fourth career home run.
Yeah, Chase, in that game, he hits a homer in the third to make it 8-1 Nats, and then he has a single in the fifth to make it 10-1. And that was the game, Chase, where he danced in the dugout afterward. He did a little bit of Strasburg. Todd, how would you describe Strasburg's dance in the dugout that evening in the dance line? He moved his body. Like, it's like he made a football move. He made a dance move. I mean, it wasn't dancing, but he did move his body in some sort of rhythmic way, I guess is how you would describe it.
Yeah, I can't remember what I wrote at the time. I wrote something, I think, or hope was witty that caused some reaction on the Twitter. But yeah, basically it was a very large man moving left to right in some capacity.
Strasburg's going through the conga line in the dugout, and he's dancing. Steven Strasburg is dancing. Trey Turner hits one in the air to center, and Ciardi makes the catch of the line drive. I don't think we've ever seen Steven Strasburg dance in a dugout on a baseball field anywhere.
Well, there wouldn't have been reason. There is now.
Steven Strasburg dancing here in the third inning. Remember where you are.
He had three at-bats. He scored two runs, three hits, five RBIs, including a homer. This is the pitcher who, oh, by the way, 5 1/3, he got the victory.
I'm glad you mentioned the dancing. I'm glad you mentioned it. I feel like we could not do this episode without at least making mention of it.
For that game, while I'm looking at the box score, Kyle MacGowan pitched the final two innings that night for the Nationals as they maintained their 13-4 victory. So kind of a callback to our the other guys, you know, episode that we've done. Just a few other things, notes with Strasburg. Career high in strikeouts for him this year. And a few other funny things. He gave up a homer in April to Harper, but then struck him out in September. It was the first time that they met in D.C. all the way until September. That was a Thursday game right before that, right as that series was wrapping up. Looking at some other things, he had a great start in Chicago, part of that August sweep at Wrigley Field. 10 strikeouts in that one. Had a perfect month of July where he took the mound five times, got five victories every time. Miami, Philly, Atlanta, Colorado, and the Dodgers. A Sunday game against the Dodgers where they won 11-4. Well, we're going to get to our parting shots in a second, but Todd, I do have this question for you. Who do you think will be the preseason favorite? I know you're not as into the awards as I am on this one, but you obviously are going to be spending a lot of time with a bunch of baseball guys.
Todd loves Manager of the Year, though.
Yeah, Todd does love Manager of the Year. You're going to be sitting around talking with a lot of baseball guys, obviously, for hours on end in West Palm. DeGrom, Scherzer, or Strasburg? Who is the 2020 preseason NL Cy Young favorite?
Only those three?
feel free to add another.
I think Jack Flaherty and Walker Buehler should round out this list. No one was better than Jack Flaherty after the All-Star game last year. That was astonishing what he did.
That's why I come to you. You got all the names and facts and figures.
Yeah, well, and also, you know, this is a little cheat sheet situation because I voted for Cy Young this year. So I was combing through everybody in a way that normal people should not be. And also I'd like to add that I will be playing hoops and hopefully taking afternoon naps in West Palm Beach around being at the facility instead of standing around for hours talking to those guys. I see them enough.
But you do have a private group text with them after you spend 9 hours with them in the press
which
box.
Right. And then also they're the people I end up playing basketball with. So we stop and argue about like backup infielders. So it's the whole thing is ridiculous on multiple levels. Pathetic, ridiculous, on and on. To me, you have to start with DeGrom after when there's nothing that he did this year, obviously winning again, that indicated he's going to be any different or should be any different next year. Luckily, we're over the idea that that wins matter when voting for this award. And, you know, he remains in a big, visible market. I think those two young guys are the most likely to take a leap, right? I don't know that there's much room left for Max Scherzer or DeGrom to go further than they already have. That would be pretty crazy, pretty wild if they were able to do that. I do think there's some room for Strasburg. As Chase said, he's had statistically better seasons than he did in 2019, despite the large workload, which was obviously a huge factor for him. So I think he can get better and do a better job, you know, just kind of drag down his ERA some and maybe do better with runners in scoring position, you know, things that every pitcher wants to get better with. So to me, yeah, I'd start with DeGrom, but then I might put, you know, either of those young guys, in particular Walker Buehler, in front of Scherzer or Strasburg. And we keep saying this. I haven't really said it much, but I, you know, overall, it keeps being said at some point, Max Scherzer isn't going to be Max Scherzer, right? Like, right? I'm asking semi-rhetorically.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm waiting for that moment.
Isn't that supposed to happen, for God's sake?
As long as he can lift his arm, he's still Max Scherzer, you know. So
yeah, well, and even when he can't move his head, shoulder, he's going to pitch Game 7. So, you know, talking to him the other day, we can throw this in here. Talking to him the other day, he said he had multiple MRIs after the season ended to make sure that his, you know, everything was cleared out with the neck and the back and the scap and all that stuff he went through last year. They all came back negative.
Great.
He started the throw. You know, really the thing that delayed his throwing program more than anything this year. He's a guy who continues to throw in the offseason. He'll take maybe a week after the season ends, but then he picks up a baseball very early compared to other major leaguers. And the thing that really delayed that this year was like a week-long hangover that he had to manage. Those are his words, not mine. and so then once the hangover was gone and the MRIs were clear, then he said he started to get back into it.
Chase, in early to mid-March, you and I are going to get an email at about 6:15 in the morning from Matt Dueling asking us to tape VODs before the season starts. And you and I are going to get dressed up. We're going to go into Studio A and we're going to tape VODs. And one of the topics is going to be, who is the preseason NL Cy Young favorite? When you're on camera, who are you going to say it is? Will it be Steven Strasburg?
That's funny. I will, you know, I do like Walker Buehler a lot. He's very young, and you can never really truly predict with pitchers. I thought Josh Johnson used to pitch for the Marlins, was going to be a Hall of Famer. I thought Felix Hernandez was going to be good forever, and you know, these guys can just basically fall off a cliff. But he is on such a meteoric rise. I think he'd probably be my pick. But I think when it comes to Strasburg, I think that there's going to be a realization by the rotation, similar to what we saw in the playoffs, where they knew they had to step up because the bullpen had to be compensated for. Now with Anthony Rendon gone, I think the onus is on them even more than it has been in the past to really lead the way because the lineup is losing its best and most versatile hitter. Guys like Juan Soto and Victor Robles, you know, you certainly hope they step up, but starting pitching is going to be far and away the strength of the team, maybe even more than it ever has been. So I think there's going to be an element of that will certainly motivate them even more. And I think when it comes to Strasburg, you know, he's got the postseason accolades. He's already cemented himself as a postseason legend. He's got a World Series MVP. But there's still stuff to accomplish in the regular season. You know, he hasn't won a Cy Young, as we mentioned. And I still think there's a chance that his best days are ahead of him in the regular season. And he's probably got to start looking ahead to the Hall of Fame at this point. I think that's the biggest thing to watch for him with the rest of his career throughout this 7-year contract. He already delivered the World Series. Now can he take his resume from very good to Cooperstown worthy? And a Cy Young, I think, would certainly solidify that. But one stat that I've thrown out there is just to keep in mind, I've said it on the podcast before, but I think it's a good one, is that he's one of only 5 active pitchers with at least 1,400 innings pitched and an ERA below 3.2. Scherzer, Kershaw, Sale, and Bumgarner are the others. So he's already in that category of pitchers. A Cy Young would certainly separate him from a lot of the people who have similar resumes to him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he had one of his best years this coming season for all the reasons I just outlined.
In addition to the Cy Young, and you talk about building and rounding out and adding to that Cooperstown resume that he would like to submit to the voters, I'd love to see him get a 300 strikeout season. He had 251 this year. I think he's, of course, fully capable of having 300. So, you know, that's something, you know, Scherzer's had 300 before, and I think Strasburg could match that. Just want to, before we get to our parting shot, I just want to throw one more great stat from start from him this year. It was the Saturday in May against the Cubs in D.C. It was a 5-2 victory, 8 innings, only allowed 2 runs, 7 strikeouts. And, you know, the Cubs took care of the Nats on Friday and Sunday, and that was a nice, that was a good win for the Nats when obviously things were not going too well for them early on in the season. We are now going to get to our parting shots. Before we go, we'll be back with you on next week. Before we'll have an episode for you before the holiday season. Todd, what's your parting shot for us today?
I just saw the Top Gun sequel trailer, and if the movie is anywhere near as good as the trailer, even though there are a couple predictable things in the trailer, I'm very excited about this for next summer. I was foolish enough when I was super young and first saw that movie to think, like, I want to go fly planes instead of go to college. And it actually ended up coming down to that. Almost, obviously, that's the Navy, but I almost went to the Air Force. It was either go in the Air Force with that pursuit of becoming a pilot or go to college and be an idiot. I chose
all
the latter.
Of Top Gun.
Yeah. In part, certainly.
Todd, you almost went to the Air Force?
Yeah, a lot of my friends went into the military.
That's some new information.
I almost went
to the Navy.
It would have been a bad fit for me at the time. But it was close. And they even said, you know, you can go to school, and then when you're done, come here. And obviously that cuts out a lot of the grunt stuff that you have to go through in between if you're entering with a college degree. So I have high hopes for the sequel because they're going to be able to shoot, you know, the flying scenes so much more adroitly now with this technology. And we see that in the trailer. Have you guys seen the trailer?
Yeah, it's hot fire.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm excited for that. And it also sent me back onto, this always happens when, for me, because apparently, again, as we were going over earlier, I'm pretty pathetic lifestyle-wise. go back to Rotten Tomatoes to check in on the original Top Gun. Critics, 55%, and they can go shove with that number. I don't know who these critics are, what they were watching, how they come to a conclusion. Here's one review from the New York Daily News. Top Gun is terribly monotonous.
Roger Ebert's always wrong on these things. I listened to a podcast called The Rewatchables, and they talk about old movies. And, like, Roger Ebert's takes are always aging horribly.
Really? Yeah. Yeah. And is Top Gun a good movie? I definitely say hell no, topped with are you kidding me?
Yeah.
So, again, to these people, take a breath. You know, they're not trying to win an Oscar award here. It is what it is, as much as I despise that phrase. So I hope they can appreciate the sequel, even if it's as cheesy as the original.
Chase, you almost joined the Navy?
Yeah, I did. I almost tried to be a naval officer, but I got an internship at then CSN Washington and never looked back.
Anybody had to cut his hair, so
true. Yeah,
can't do that.
That's true.
That's a pivot. You're like, I'm going to join the armed forces, and they're like, no, we need you to sit in the feed room. and make sure the Wizards pregame show is recording. That's a change right there. But it worked out for you, so glad you made the right decision for you, obviously.
Yeah.
Chase, what's your parting shot for us?
So, first of all, we should tell that story to Travis Thomas, because I feel like he'll start calling Todd Dybas Top Gun Todd.
Yeah.
They'll have a new nickname for him.
High priority.
That's the other nickname.
Yes, my parting shot is for the second straight episode, a shout-out to Johnny DePuglia. He got promoted to vice president. Mark Shalaba also got a promotion in the Nationals front office. And the reason why I want to mention it is because I referenced an interview that Johnny did where he told that story about Ronald Acuna almost being a National. Well, in that interview, when he was talking about Juan Soto and signing him and discovering him, he also said something along the lines of, yeah, and I'm still on a one-year contract. Can you believe it? So he did some public posturing on television, on national television, and ended up getting a promotion. I don't know the terms of it, whether he's got a 2-3 year deal or something, but he got a promotion. It's well-deserved. Friend of the show. And I just want to say respect to someone for jockeying for a new job in that public of a way and ending up getting it. But what else are the Nats going to do? I mean, when you sign a guy like Juan Soto, I think you can say anything you want. And finally, I'll say this. I'm watching ESPN right now as we're doing this. And Todd's favorite player, Kelly Oubre Jr., is on there because he dunked on Paul George last night. And I just have a question for Todd, who loved watching Kelly Oubre Jr. play for the Wizards. Do you miss him?
I do miss his inability to navigate traffic on any level, his inability to shoot, his completely overblown stature because of his hair, occasional highlight, and personal grandstanding. Other than that, it's fine.
All right, my party shot is this is a recurring anniversary gift from my in-laws. My wife and I, we have season pass to the county center. No big deal, you know, that's how we roll. And
and
this week went to My Fair Lady, which is there. Horrendous show. I mean, just talk about outdated. I mean, terrible. But thank you. I can't thank my in-laws enough for the tickets. Very appreciative of the wonderful evening. But the main, have you ever seen any iteration of the show?
Mercifully, no.
Okay.
No.
So it's like, you know, when I go to the County Center, it's like I want to unplug, right? I mean, if you want to get away from covering local Washington, D.C. sports, County Center is a nice little spot to hide out from for a few hours. The main character's last name was Doolittle. So, you know, right away, it's like, okay, now I got Nats on the brain. So there's that. But yeah, My Fair Lady, like, I'm sure that these shows worked well when they came out 100 years ago and were entertaining at the time. But like, let's put an end to these kind of shows. They might have been classics, but now they're just terrible. Yeah.
An end to My Fair Lady. You heard it here.
Yeah. I'm like, that show, that is the stupidest plot you've ever heard. Oh my God, it's terrible. I don't know which one's worse, that or Hello Dolly that we saw last year. All right, well, that's going to do it for us. We'll be back with you next week. Want to thank Chase and Todd. Want to give you just a heads up to check out the Capitals Talk podcast. Radko Gudas joins Rob Carlin, so download that one as the Capitals are, of course, having a great season with them. We'll be back with you next week. Hope everyone enjoys the start of bowl season. I know Todd cannot wait for Charlotte against Buffalo in the Bahamas Bowl on Friday afternoon. So he'll be live tweeting that one, so please be sure to check out that feed. And Chase, of course, will be keeping you up to date on all things going on with the Washington Wizards. For all the guys, and for Steven Strasburg, welcome back to D.C. Talk to you soon, everyone.
3 balls, 2 strikes. Strasburg ready. The runners go. The pitch. Curveball, strike 3, called. On pitch number 114, Steven Strasburg locks up Tucker, the pinch hitter, on a breaking ball. He survives the sixth inning with the game tied. Strasburg emphatic high fives on his way down the dugout steps on the third base side. Big time pitch there for Strasburg, strikeout number 7.